You're listening to Foresight, a podcast about making work better. I'm your co-host, Mark Edgar, a former consultant and coach who now works as a chief people officer on a mission to make work more human.
And I'm Naomi Teitelman, a former big firm consultant and HR executive, now striving to make work better one organization and one leader at a time. Every week, we'll discuss the latest trends that are impacting the new world of work to help you be a better leader for the future. Welcome to Foresight, a podcast about making work better. I'm one of your co-hosts, Naomi Teitelman, and I'm joined today by our next special guest, David Pallara. David works as a fractional chief marketing officer, independent consultant, speaker, and marketing instructor for York University's Schulich School of Business, which I've discovered informs David's interesting point of view on the employee experience. He recently added author to his biography with the release of a new book called Tom Talent and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Recruitment Process. I've always said I'm a frustrated marketer at heart. I think David is a frustrated HR professional at heart. So let's find out. Welcome to the podcast, David. It's great to have you here today.
Thank you for having me, Naomi. It's delighted to be on the show.
Great. Where are you joining us from today, David?
I live just north of Toronto in Bradford, not the one Wayne Gretzky's from, the one famous for its carrots.
Oh, nice. Nice. I don't think I've ever visited that Bradford. So got to get out there one day and pick some carrots, maybe. Okay, so before we get started, in each Foresight episode, we like to start with a check-in question as a warm-up. So my check-in question today, David, if money were not a consideration, what would you do for work?
It's funny, I always ask that, as that's always one of my questions to people who recently joined my team, because I think it says a lot about people. But honestly, I think I'd be doing exactly what I'm doing right now. I mean, when I left Google in 2016, recruiters would ask me, so what are you doing with your time right now? And I would tell them I'm borrowing a few years from my retirement, because when I retire, I don't want to lie on a beach and watch Netflix all day. I want to keep busy with interesting consulting projects, and I want to speak and write and teach courses and take courses and spend time with my family. And as it turns out, you don't need to wait to retire until you do all that stuff. You can make a pretty decent living at it. So who knew? What about you, Naomi? What are you doing? If you won the lottery tomorrow, what would you be doing?
So I don't know that I would get my dream job. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't get my dream job, but it would have something to do in the fitness realm and probably a Peloton instructor. And I don't think they would take me, but if I had my choice of any job in the world, I would probably do something along those lines. I've been an avid spinner since the very beginning, when the first kind of bikes came out after step aerobics was my thing. And those who know me and listeners to the podcast too probably know that I am a very keen Pelotoner. Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, you could have added value where you could spin on the bike and give HR advice at the same time.
Yes, I absolutely could. Amazing. I have one viewer. I have one taker. Amazing. So let's get into it, David. So like I said, you are a marketer, but have written about the employee experience definitely more than once. So where does that passion for the employee experience come from? And how are the CX of marketing, so customer experience of marketing, and the EX of HR, the employee experience of HR, related?
Okay, so to answer your first question, my passion comes from two places. First, as a career marketer and retail marketing instructor, I've trained myself to be hypersensitive to very good and very bad customer experiences. And so I look for those experiences everywhere, and that includes in recruitment processes. And second, it comes from a number of times in my career where I've been an active job seeker, and I've had to experience a lot of the frustrating, borderline ridiculous things I wrote about in this book. Mm-hmm. And I think that answers your second question too. You know, a great experience is a great experience. And the very best HR people I know, and I know a lot of them, work as hard to deliver a great experience for employees as the best retailers do to deliver a great experience for their customers.
Yeah, absolutely. And we say that, you know, employee experience has really, really evolved over the past few years. And no longer do employees or candidates or job seekers tolerate kind of not best in class experiences, because they are a consumer and an employee at the same time. So if they're experiencing a very high grade of customer experience, they don't tolerate poor employee experience. And in fact, I've heard of a lot of cases where people will leave companies because the employee experience just is not up to snuff and is very frustrating. So your newly released book has a very provocative title, and I've had a peek at it. It's really fun, a satire on the recruitment process, if you will. I'm sure many of our listeners can relate to, at the very least, its title. So what inspired you to write Tom Talent?
So the title is an homage of sorts to Judith Viard's classic children book, Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day, which I loved reading as a kid. But the content is nothing alike. So Ms. Viard, if you're reading this, please don't sue me. In that book, Alexander has a ridiculously bad day and nothing goes well for him. And unfortunately, I think too many recruitment processes feel like that, at least from a candidate's perspective. I was inspired to write this book based on my own experiences and observations. And I hope that by calling out some of these terrible, horrible, no good, very bad recruitment practices in an amusing and unique way, and then offering a few reasons why people should care and how they can do better, I think people start to question why they do things the way they do and how can they actually do things better. So, and at this point, before we go on, I want to acknowledge the incredible contributions of the book's illustrator, Rafael Davila. This book would just be words without him. He just did a phenomenal job bringing my words to life in the first part of the book, which is an illustrated story.
Yeah, the illustrations are great. So thank you. And so why do you think the recruitment process is broken? I mean, it seems like one of those no-brainer, low-hanging fruits. Like, we have so much technology at our disposal these days. Why is the recruitment process broken? And do you think it's only on the candidate side or on the company side as well?
So one of the things I'm really trying to get across in this book is that the candidate side and the company side are really two sides of the same coin.
Right.
I mean, when a company's recruitment process isn't great, whether they realize it or not, they send a very strong signal that their company isn't great. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. If it takes a company 9 interviews to decide they want to hire somebody, how long does it take them to make other important decisions? Right. Like, that's not a great look on a company. So if you're an active job seeker in desperate need of a job, you'll put up with more frustration in the hopes of landing the role. But even if you get the job, that's not a great first impression of the company, right? And passive job seekers who are already working and not actively looking to make a change, I don't know many of them who are going to agree to an excessively long interview process, which means the company has reduced the size of its available candidate pool just by not being empathetic to what it's like as a job seeker, which is crazy when you think about it.
Yeah.
So why do I think it's broken? I think most companies will proclaim some version of our people are our most important asset, but too many of them still have the old school mentality that you're lucky to be working here. Mm-hmm. And I get the fact that work is work and it isn't always fun, but most companies really couldn't succeed without the talent and the effort of their people. And so joining a company isn't a unilateral decision. A candidate needs to want to work there. And so when a company sets up a process that makes it actually attractive for a candidate to go, you know, wow, this is a great company and I really want to be there, that's a win-win. And I think just more companies need to make the candidate recruitment process a priority instead of thinking that it's a one-way street.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, there's just so many opportunities to automate certain things and augment the role of the hiring leader and of the recruitment team that just don't seem to be taken advantage of right now in its fullest. And far too often do I hear of situations where candidates are ghosted kind of at all levels of the organization, right up to the C-suite. And that just doesn't seem to be, it's just not acceptable in this day and age.
100%. I've heard of candidates having like 7 or 8 like interviews and then not hearing from the company again. Like that is absolutely, that's just rude. Like there's no excuse for that. I don't care how busy you are. I don't care how much the company has as on its plate. I mean, you can't ask someone to invest that amount of time in the company and then just forget about them. It's just when it's so easy to just send a quick email or a quick phone call to say, look, here's what happened. We're going in another direction and the job got canceled or whatever. Saying anything is better than just disappearing from the off face of the planet.
Yeah, absolutely. Such low-hanging fruit. I mean, literally, even an automated email that says you're not it is way better than people waiting by the phone for that phone call, right? It just seems to be just totally unacceptable for this day and age. So your book is not just about your opinion, but it is actually backed by a survey conducted by Cattle, which is a consumer and data insights company. How does a broken recruitment process impact a company's reputation and essentially its bottom line?
So it significantly impacts a company's reputation and bottom line, and I'll give you 2 specific insights. So as part of this survey, we asked over 9,000 people. Here's the exact question. If you experienced what you felt was a terrible recruitment process with a company, how would this affect your willingness to apply to other roles at that company in the future? And only 16.5% of respondents said it would have no impact and that they would eagerly apply to future roles. 16.5%. That's 83.5% that said it would have an impact. Now let's compare that 16.5% to the 28.9% of survey respondents, not quite double, but almost double, at the other end of the scale that answered, I would not apply to this company again if I had any other option available. Right? Think about that. Almost 30% of candidates basically said that if they feel they were mistreated in an interview process, they would not give that company a second chance ever.
Wow.
Now, the companies that don't care about that fact, they're not going to be interested in this book. But I'd right. like to think that there are a lot of really smart HR people out there that understand the business implications of continually shrinking your available talent pool for no good reason. Right? Here's the second insight. And you definitely don't need to be in HR to understand the impact of this one. We asked, if you experienced what you felt was a terrible recruitment process with a company, how would it affect your perception of the company's brand or your willingness to buy from them in the future? Hmm. And over half of respondents said it would have a moderate or significant impact, 57.6% to be exact.
Wow.
The top answer was moderate impact. I would think much less of the brand and or avoid purchasing their product services when possible. 33.2% of people said that.
Wow.
So now we're not just talking about losing candidates. We're talking about losing reputation, about losing sales, about losing customers, mm-hmm. right? I read a lot, and let's keep this in mind. We asked over 9,000 people. Like, I didn't ask my mom and a couple of her friends to fill out a survey. Like, this is statistically significant data that can be sliced and diced in terms of different generational views against gender, against active versus passive job seekers. Right? So this is statistically significant data. Now, I read a lot about how HR leaders aren't always given a seat at the table. And that's not a dig against my friends in HR, because marketers often have the same problem. Mm-hmm. But HR leaders, if you want a seat at the table, you need to understand how what you do impacts the health of the business. And I just gave you a data point that shows that definitively.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no company out there is going to say, I don't care about those people who are going to never shop at my store or never buy my products ever again. That's a really significant number. So thank you for sharing that, because that brings it back full circle to how the employee experience and the customer experience are just so intricately related, right? If you have a bad taste in your mouth about a company, it doesn't really matter if you experienced it as a customer or an employee or both. It impacts you either consciously or subconsciously. And in this case, I mean, in a survey, it's consciously affecting people. There's a big hill to climb from there.
You know, every single candidate that applies to the company, they're not just doing it because they want the paycheck, right? They're doing it. There's been a ton of jobs that come across my screen where I'm like, I don't want to work there.
Yeah.
Their values aren't aligned, or the role's not just quite right, or there's a whole bunch of reasons why a candidate might not want to work at a company. But every candidate is also a potential consumer. Like, they wear two hats.
Yeah.
So why would you, given the choice between treating a candidate reasonably or treating them poorly, would you choose treating them poorly and have those people either not support your business or, you know, the top answer of the question, you know, I mentioned 33.2% said it had a moderate impact. The significant impact response was 24.4%. And that answer was, I would lose tremendous respect for the brand and stop spending money with them, as well as encourage my network not to either.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're going to tell people about your bad experience. You're going to tell, oh, I'm never shopping there again. And you shouldn't either. It's just such low-hanging fruit to just treat people the way you want to be treated.
Yeah. Yeah. And that goes back to my point about technology. So I'm going to go there. How can technology be used to tackle some of these low-hanging fruit?
If your ATS system makes candidates upload a resume and then retype everything in their resume, get rid of your ATS system. All right? Seriously, it's one of the biggest pain points I've both personally encountered and have heard from others. The technology exists. I have personally applied to companies that do not have that. Or you upload the resume and the parsing is such that I don't have to go and retype and reformat everything. So if you're using bad technology, you can blame the technology if you want, but you also should take a look in the mirror and say, like, I'm choosing to use this, right? When there are other options available. So the technology exists. Companies have to decide that good enough isn't good enough for your business and invest in something better.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just one example, right? There's lots of different examples of technology that can be used. Like I mentioned before, as simple as an automated email that says, we will get back to you in 3 days. And then remind that recruiter that they actually have committed to getting back to someone in 3 days, right? That exists.
100%. But Naomi, the thing is, you're even more advanced because most people won't commit to you will hear from us in 3 days.
Right, exactly. Yes.
That is setting and managing the candidate expectation. So part of it is making the promise, which a lot of companies won't do.
Right.
Part of it is keeping the promise.
Right? Yes, absolutely.
And in the course I teach, you know, I ask students what the definition of a brand is. And my favorite definition of a brand comes from Muhtar Kent, who was the former chairman and CEO of the Coca-Cola company. And he said, a brand is a promise. A great brand is a promise kept.
Mm-hmm.
That is the most succinct definition of and clear definition of what a brand actually is. A brand, every single touch point a customer has with your company is part of your brand. And that includes, in this case, the candidate process. The frustration they feel as part of the recruitment process impacts your brand. And that's really going back to kind of one of the first questions you asked me, you know, why am I qualified to talk about a recruitment process? You know, I'm a marketer. I'm not an HR professional. Well, I think that's exactly what makes me qualified to talk about this process, because I'm looking at this through the lens of how do we make the candidate experience better so that recruitment and HR is accretive to the brand. It adds value to the brand, not diminishes it.
Yeah, absolutely. So true. So what needs to be done to fix the experience on both sides? Maybe you can share some of the tips you have in your book. And what can businesses do today to improve their recruitment processes and practices to enhance their brand?
Sure. So I offer some specific recommendations in the book, but the first and arguably most important thing businesses need to do is recognize that this is a problem.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Going back to part of our earlier conversation, if you think it's fine, it's not a priority, we have other things to worry about, this is not going to get better. Like anything, right. You have to actively say, we are going to make this a priority, and we are going to hold this person and this team responsible for it. We're going to put metrics behind it, and we're going to measure you on it, right? There's going to be some form of your compensation tied to making this better.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. Right? So let me pause you there for 1 second, because I think that is a critical point, and where a lot of companies fall down is that there aren't the right metrics in place, right? So if you have time to fill, you're not going after the right candidates. You're just looking to hire as many candidates as possible, which has implications, right? And other metrics are just so outdated that they just are not, they're not good for the company, and they're not good for the company's brand. So any metrics that you've seen that work really well?
I don't know any specific metrics that are working in terms of that. I'm speaking more in general terms that, you know, who is responsible? Who is going to lose a part of their bonus if the candidate survey that's given at the end of a recruitment process does not hit this threshold?
Right.
Right.
Which is the big assumption, because I'm sure most organizations do not send out a candidate experience survey because they don't want to know, right? Because then they have to address it.
And to your exact point, right? So how great of a company experience do you have to have when you get rejected for a role, but still answer the survey positively?
Right.
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 So, you know, and there are companies out there, and I have personally received surveys and completed surveys where I didn't get the job, but the process was so fair and so transparent, and everybody I met with was so nice that when they send out that survey, I'm like, you know what? You did things really well, right? Now, maybe you have to factor in for a little bit of bias, right? If you have a bunch of rejected and dejected candidates, you might not expect, you know, nines and tens is not maybe what the target should be,
right?
But they also should be ones and twos either, right?
Yeah.
So set the right number. Let's say we need to say that successful hires are rating the process a 9 or above, an 8 or above, how aggressive you want to be. And unsuccessful hires have to rate the process at least a 5 or above.
Right. Yeah.
That's a great start.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great starting point. So what else can companies do now?
So I think we've talked about, you know, it's not okay to speak to a candidate and then ghost them, you know, updated on where they stand in the process. And if they're no longer in the process, let them know that. It's not okay to expect candidates to invest hours, days, and weeks into a case study that amounts to free recommendations for the company, right?
Yeah.
That's unethical and it's exploitative.
Yeah, it's a big one.
It's a big one. There are other effective ways to test how a candidate thinks. explore those. And keep in mind, I have participated in processes where I've, four processes where I've had to write a case study, and I've gotten the job three of those times. I like case studies as a person, but they can take a lot of work.
Yeah.
And if, you know, sometimes it's just so blatantly obvious you're trying to take advantage of a candidate, where I had a PR friend of mine once say this company that she was applying for was about to enter the Canadian market. And the case study was, write a full marketing, a PR plan on how you would enter the Canadian market. Well, that's not fair. That's the job you're hiring for.
Yeah.
And the very real threat is that unethical companies will take all your great examples and not hire you, and hire someone more junior and give them the plan and say, here, work on this. It's not fair.
That's terrible.
So I think that if you really want to use a case study, make it a good one, right? And keep in mind, you know, I'm a university instructor. I use case studies in my class. There are good case studies you could do, but it's not what's our biggest problem and let's expect a fully fledged plan for it, right?
Yeah.
And if it's going to take a significant amount of time for a candidate to complete, pay them a reasonable consulting fee for their time.
Yeah, I love that idea. Yeah.
I had to do a case study. When I worked at Coca-Cola, they gave me a case study and they said, there's a case study is part of the process. And I'm like, yeah, no problem. I said, do me a favor, send it to me the night before. And the recruitment person was a little bit confused. They're like, why? And I said, because if you send it to me a week before, I'm still going to do it the night before. But if you send it to me a week before, you're going to think that I spent 7 days on it. And I'm telling you that as part of an interview process, I'm not going to spend 7 days on a process. So you send it to me the night before, and you'll know that the amount of time I spent on it was reasonable. I think I spent 4 hours in total. And then I came in the next day and presented it. Now, that would be stressful to a lot of people, right?
Yes.
So I'm just saying that as one example of how you cap the commitment and you make it clear up front.
Yeah.
The one process, I won't name the name, but the one process I was unsuccessful with, the case study they presented was ridiculous. And it wasn't even the final step in the process.
Mm-hmm.
After that, you still had three other interviews.
Right.
So think of all the unsuccessful candidates who are spending hours and hours and hours in what amounts to free work for no payoff. It shouldn't be done. And there's no real reason to do it. It's not okay to hide the compensation on offer until the very end of the process, after people have already invested time in speaking with you. And it's not okay to lowball someone who's actively job searching just because you can. And it's counterproductive too, because those are the first people who are going to leave when a better offer comes along that values their talents for what they're truly worth. So be transparent, be reasonable. And if you say you value people, prove it.
Yeah. Seems so simple, but why do so many companies still not do those things? It's actually quite mind blowing.
Because they're not thinking about the employee or the candidate experience. In the very best case scenario, you've chosen this candidate and they decide they choose you. And now that candidate isn't just a candidate and a customer. They're also an employee. Why do you want to give them a negative first impression right off the bat? Right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that way. And there are a lot of really great companies out there that don't make it that way. There just needs to be more of them that consider the candidate experience as a priority.
Yes, absolutely. I'm for everything you just said, and hope that after our listeners hear this podcast, they feel empowered to go and make some changes in their organization. So on that note, you know, many of our listeners are in fact HR professionals, not all in the recruitment space, all over the map in HR and leaders in general. So what advice would you have for them? Where should they start? If they're saying, oh no, Tom Terrible or Tom Talent is coming our way and we do have a horrible recruitment process, where should they start?
So the very first thing you should do to start is to buy a copy of the book. That was an easy one. Buy a copy of the book for you and buy a copy to drop off it on your CEO's desk and say, you know, let's have a conversation about this because our process is looking a whole lot like this and we should change it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that also it's just talk to people, right? There's a lot, it's not a simple solution, right? If you have a terrible culture in your company and where people are afraid to speak up, then asking them, what was your recruitment process like, isn't going to help you. It's not going to give you any valuable data, right?
Right.
But assuming you don't have a terrible process, go and talk to the last person you hired and say, hey, we're trying to get better. We hired you. Tell us what you liked. And if you were in charge of this process, what would you improve?
Yeah. Right?
Go and talk to the marketing team that you have in your organization and ask them, say, hey, if we, you know, you are experts in understanding a consumer need and positioning our products in such a way that consumers want to buy those products, the feeling need to buy those products. Well, we have a special assignment for you. We're recruiting you to be an honorary HR person for a couple of weeks as a stretch assignment. And, you know, why don't you help us improve that experience with a marketer's lens? You know, it's so funny. Naomi, early in my career, I was working at Starbucks, and one of my friends, he was an HR manager. And after a conversation we had once, he said to me, he's like, you know what would be really interesting for your next role? I'd really love to see you as your next role be an HR manager. Mm-hmm. And I said, really? And then I talked to my manager, who had a great relationship at the time. I still do. And I said, well, you know, this is what Manny said. And she burst out laughing, and she said, was he joking? Because I'm not always the most politically correct person. I'm not really one for rules and policies, but that's not what HR is, right? HR is supposed to be about understanding people and how to get the best out of them. And I think that in that way, you know, talk to your marketing team because they have some experience with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk about fungible skills all the time. And, you know, you never know who your next great HR manager could be, you know, as we think about the new world of work and certain pieces of jobs being automated. You know, I think that that's not a stretch at all to at least partner very closely with the marketing organization and do some, you know, swapping and cross-pollination there is really critical. In fact, when I was in my HR role at American Express, I worked very closely with our PR colleagues because we were trying to get out a story about how amazing Amex is for women. And so that was a joint effort, right? I always say, like I said in the intro, I always say I'm a frustrated marketer at heart, but I'm by no means a marketer. So it's really important to work closely with those who are the experts in this field. And more, you know, you and I talked way back about the fact that marketing and HR needs to get much, much closer.
100%. And you know what? I think that there's one other thing that can be done. And this one's going to be a little bit controversial, but hear me out. I think that in many organizations, the person in charge of recruitment is often the most junior person in the HR department. Not always, but sometimes. I think that in those cases in particular, that person, as part of their onboarding, has to go out and work with the other functions. Mm-hmm. They have to be able to understand what success looks like in the role and where the skills are transferable. Right. Yeah. It's too often the low hanging fruit. If you're looking for a director of marketing for a QSR company, the low hanging fruit is to go to other director of marketings who are currently working at QSR companies and see if they're interested in making a switch.
Yeah.
Right. But a lot of companies won't consider people from other industries, mm-hmm. even though the skills are perfectly transferable. And even though those people could bring a lens and a viewpoint that actually moves the business forward.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Famous quote attributed to Einstein, you know, insanity is the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Yes, yeah, so true.
So if you're struggling to win in your industry and compete as a business, maybe it's time to shake things up and look at a different talent pool. But the people who are looking at the first resumes need to be able to identify that talent and need to be able to say, this person doesn't have the exact experience we're looking for, but we think this person might be an interesting candidate, and put a few of those in the mix. And I think that would be a huge step forward, especially for people who are on the other side of that and saying, I know I can do this job. And just because I don't have X industry experience, that doesn't mean I can't do this job, because that's a point of frustration too. That is a very much a philosophical debate, whether we want to go there or not. But it is a recommendation that to make sure that the recruitment team is very immersed and attached at the hip with the functions for which they're recruiting.
Yeah, so true. And again, where technology can play a big role as well, right? We need both technology and recruiters not to be so literal about what's in the job description and what's in the rec, because to your point, we're shrinking the talent pool before we even get out there in the market, which is not what anybody wants. We also need to engender growth mindset in our organizations so that hiring leaders don't see kind of atypical or non-traditional candidates and say, what are you doing? You're not doing your job, right? So I think there's a need to kind of have that growth mindset all throughout, and also the appetite to experiment with different technology tools in order to make the process better. And of course, there will always need to be a human lens on these things. But the more, you know, especially for high volume roles, right? Like, how can we make that experience better? It may need some automation, right? There may need to be some, so that we're not ghosting, you know, 3,000 people who have applied for a job. But how do we partner better, both with technology and with the business leaders we're supporting, in order to have kind of that end-to-end process be what we want it to be? Because you know, at the end of the day, no business leader would say, we really want our recruitment process to be terrible, or we really want to waste the amount of cycles that are actually wasted on all the things that we do as humans for the recruitment process that can easily be automated. So, you know, it's really figuring out what is that problem we're trying to solve. To your point, bringing in marketing, bringing in kind of what we've talked to, you know, a few different leaders about, a few different thought leaders around mission-based teams or systemic HR, really what is that core problem we're trying to solve, and bringing together a team that can assemble and then disband once the process is better. But just, you know, tweaking things here and there is not going to solve the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad recruitment process.
Absolutely. You know, at the risk of oversimplifying the problem, which I don't mean to do, I know it's a complex problem, but the last two lines in the story section of the book really kind of cover it. He said, develop the process you'd like to go through the next time Tom or Tina Talent is you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Taking on that design thinking or employee-centric, candidate-centric lens is really, really, really 100% critical. I mean, there's nothing more important in a candidate experience. So, David, we are at the end of our time together, but before we go, I have two more questions. So first, how can listeners hear more about the great stuff you're doing?
So please check out my website, davidpilera.com. There are links to everything I'm working on these days, including my blog, Deep Thoughts, which you can sign up for to have delivered to your inbox every Monday morning. Please consider picking up a copy of Tom Talent and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Recruitment Process on Amazon. It's available in both Kindle version and paperback, but the paperback is better if you want to buy one to very discreetly leave on your CEO's desk, and with or without a sticky note that says, we should call David to chat.
That's awesome. Thank you. And before you go, we like to always end on a high note. So it's also called a feel good. We do it in our newsletter. We do it at the end of each of our podcast episodes. So what are you feeling good about today, David? It could be personal or professional.
You know, the world needs more feel goods. So I'm glad you do that. I'm feeling good about the fact that I get to do fun things like this interview, that I have a terrific wife and four amazing kids, and that I get paid to do what I love, which is something I know not everybody can say. So, you know, I'm feeling pretty good today.
Amazing. Well, thank you so, so much for being with us today. And we will leave links to David's website and link to where you can find his book in our show notes. And until next time, everyone, take care. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Foresight. If you enjoyed the episode, we would love to hear from you. Leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Your ratings and reviews also help more people like you find our show so that we can reach more future forward leaders and achieve our mission of making work better.
Follow us on Instagram and LinkedIn at Future Forward, and sign up for our weekly newsletter, Foresight, on our website, futureforward.com.
That's FutureForward.com. Where we share even more about the new world of work.
Talk to you next week.